Welcome to Smart Talk and a Smart Talk Road Trip. I'm Scott Lamar. For today's program, we're on the road in Hershey at the Hershey Story Museum. Over the next hour, we'll learn about another town named Hershey. This one is in Cuba. Also, improvements and economic development in Hershey. But up front on today's show, Milton Hershey was far ahead of his time in several ways, one of which was his vision to create an industrial town where the workers who made Hershey chocolate could live, work, and enjoy themselves in their time off. That town became Hershey. But Milton Hershey had a similar plan for a town in Cuba where sugar would be manufactured. It was also named Hershey and had many of the same characteristics as Hershey, Pennsylvania. That was until it was sold and then later taken over when Fidel Castro came to power. There's a new exhibit here at the Hershey Story Museum called Mr. Hershey's Cuba, A Sweet Venture in Sugar, 1916 to 1946. And we have a lot of very knowledgeable people on our program today to talk about Hershey, Cuba, and a little bit later also talking about economic development in Hershey. Up front joining us is Valerie Sieber, who is the collections manager at the Hershey Story Museum. Ms. Sieber, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
Also, Pamela Whitenack, who is manager of the Hershey Community Archives. Ms. Whitenack, good to see you again.
Good morning.
And let me tell our audience, and we have a large studio audience with us here in Hershey today, if you have a question or a comment, step right up to the microphone and we gladly would answer your questions and engage in conversation with you. First of all, I have to say that I always compliment the locations where we are for these road trips, if it is warranted. But almost everywhere we go, it is warranted. But this is just a beautiful facility. If you haven't been here before, highly encourage you to come and to see this new exhibit about Hershey, Cuba. Valerie Sieber, as the collections manager, you're responsible for putting this new exhibit together. I would say it's probably not a big guess to say that many people don't realize that there was a Hershey, Cuba.
That's right, Scott. A lot of our guests who were coming to the museum were interested in the story. We have a little bit of information on the second floor of our permanent exhibit gallery, but don't go into great detail. With the renewal of diplomatic relations between the United States and Cuba and just growing interest, we really decided that it was time to expand upon that story and really go in depth with the many accomplishments that Milton Hershey did in Cuba.
You may have just answered this question, but I was wondering whether opening diplomatic relations with Cuba during the last years of the Obama administration, if that had anything to do with this exhibit.
It did. Generally, our staff has always been very interested in this story. Timing worked out really well for us. Milton Hershey first entered Cuba in 1916. It's right around the same time that Obama made that his historic trip. And 2018 marked the 100th anniversary of the creation of a sugar mill in a town in Cuba that Milton Hershey built. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be talking about what's different or the unique characteristics of Hershey, Cuba throughout the program. But I started off by saying that there probably are a lot of people who don't know much or that there even was a Hershey, Cuba. So what don't people know?
But they don't know the community exists. For one thing, the community is still there. It has a different name after the revolution, but the sugar industry that Milton Hershey created there, Cuba was a world sugar producer for a very long time, and Milton Hershey saw an opportunity to solve a problem that he was having obtaining sugar in 1916 during World War I. He was sourcing sugar from Europe and became rationed. Sugar, of course, is an essential ingredient in Hershey's milk chocolate.
Sugar coming from Europe. I imagine that they were wholesalers then?
He's buying on the wholesale level,
right,
yes, but
right.
Through sugar beet production. So he made the switch to sugar cane production after he started buying property in Cuba.
It has a different name now. What is the name now?
Camila Cienfuegos, after a Cuban revolutionary.
From what I understand, almost everyone still calls it Hershey.
Yeah, they don't say Hershey, they say Hershey.
Hershey. So it's still known as Hershey in Cuba. Where is Hershey, Cuba located?
It's about 30 miles east of Havana.
And it was located there for a specific reason, right?
There was very little infrastructure in that area at the time, but it was perfect for growing sugarcane. Milton Hershey started off by buying an existing plantation. Most of the Cuban businessmen that he was working with thought he was crazy because there was nothing there. But he knew how to create the infrastructure and attract good loyal workers to a community because he had already done that here in Pennsylvania.
When you say there was nothing there, there are photographs in the exhibit of what it looked like, what the ground looked like before Hershey Cuba was built. And you're right, there absolutely was nothing there. But what did he have in mind? I mean, obviously, Hershey's chocolate, Hershey needed sugar, and he didn't want to get it through Europe. So what did he have in mind? What vision did he have?
Really creating a just a town and an industry around sugar growing, manufacturing. At the time, when he first started, they were just producing raw sugar, and then they were exporting that to be refined elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So kind of walk me through the process here. Raw sugar as opposed to the finished product.
Right. So raw sugar is a very unrefined, very coarse, and not fit for human consumption. But what Milton Hershey then needed to do was refine that further to increase the purity content to create what we know as, white table sugar, as granulated sugar.
So sugar is one thing, and, you know, being able to get the sugar to Hershey for Hershey chocolate, obviously there's a need, and Milton Hershey saw that need. But as he did here in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and again, this is probably one of the little known parts of the story, is that Milton Hershey created a town much like Hershey, Pennsylvania. I don't know whether it looks alike or not, but the idea behind it was much the same. Talk about those ideas that he had.
To attract a loyal workforce, he provided housing. Workers could rent their homes for a pretty modest rate. And the housing that he provided was much nicer than the typical bohio across the island, which would have been a much more...
Bohio, what is that?
It's the name for the typical type of house.
Which is?
It usually has a thatched palm, thatched roof, mud walls, dirt floor. So Milton Hershey's homes were either made of stone or wood. They had front porches. They had areas for gardens. And they were encouraged to garden and have chickens if they wished, and really just create a much nicer environment in which to live.
So would it be fair to say or accurate to say that the houses built in Cuba were much like the houses here in Hershey, Pennsylvania?
Slightly different architecturally and certainly different landscaping.
Different climate and that
right.
kind of thing.
So, they didn't need air conditioning or heat, really, but they had several bedrooms, kitchen. They had really nice front porch and much just generally nicer conditions.
They didn't need air conditioning?
No.
Why? Well, being on the coast?
There was usually a pretty nice breeze coming from the coast. They're not too far from the town of Santa Cruz del Norte, and they're up on a high plateau.
Okay, so housing was one thing, but what were some of the other characteristics of the town?
Recreation was always important to Milton Hershey. He provided here in Pennsylvania, he did the same in Cuba. They had a Hershey Sport Club, so it was just a social club where you could play dominoes, play cards, get together with your friends. They would have dances on Fridays and Saturday nights. They would show movies. They also had a baseball team, which was pretty good team, an amateur team. Many of the mills had amateur baseball teams. Hershey's was very successful in the 1930s, winning several national amateur championships. He also had a golf course. And people just had a much better life than in some of the other sugar mill towns.
Again, sounds very much like Hershey, Pennsylvania, during that time where the years leading up to that time. Question I had here was his ideal for Hershey Cuba more economic or philanthropic?
It's both. He's a businessman, obviously. He's in it to make a product, to make a quality product. But he really recognized that happy, loyal workers were more productive and was really to his benefit. To provide those other ancillary services to make their lives better.
What about pay?
They were paid better than most of the other sugar mills. They were known to pay better. At one point, the Cuban government is increasing wages across the board. There was no minimum wage in Cuba. So by the 1930s and 40s, the government is blanketly saying everybody's wages go up 25%. So within about 3 years, the Hershey Corporation was paying 103% higher wages than most of their competitors.
Which so more started, than twice.
Right, which started to make it hard to do business.
Oh, I would think. So what happened? I mean, this started in 1916, as the exhibit says. It goes to 1946?
There are a lot of factors that play into the sale of the sugar corporation. Through the 1930s, the Cuban government is placing quota restrictions on all mills and refineries in Cuba. So Hershey is actually making far less sugar than they're capable of making. The United States is also putting import tariffs on sugar coming from Cuba to protect industries here in the U.S.
Tariffs?
Yes.
Kind of in the news today.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very timely.
I diverge. Go ahead.
So that plus the higher wage rate, it's just becoming harder and harder to run the company the way Milton Hershey wanted to, according to his vision. Also in the 30s, there's growing political and labor unrest in Cuba. And the manager of the mill at that time, Percy Staples, who was really in charge of the community and the sugar mill, is recognizing that this may become a dangerous situation, and is advising Milton Hershey in 1944 that maybe it's time to think about selling the corporation.
So he does, and it still produces sugar. But then in the late 50s, 1959, there's the revolution in Cuba. Fidel Castro takes over the nation. And what happens to the sugar mill in Hershey?
The sugar mill is renamed Camilo Cienfuegos, the same as the town. And the Cuban government continues to operate the mill until about 2002. Their relationship with the Soviet Union is supporting the sugar industry in Cuba, and they're also trading with China, another communist country. But really, by 2002, they're having a lot of problems obtaining parts for the aging mill. And production is going down, so they make the decision to close the mill in 2002, and it's been started to be dismantled since then.
I was wondering, when you say started to be dismantled, I mean, are there still remnants of it there?
I believe so. I've never seen it. I've seen some photographs. It's mostly a shell of what it used to be, but the housing in the community is still there and still very vibrant.
One thing that Castro did, and this was not just Hershey and sugar, but he nationalized industry in Cuba after the revolution, and that happened with the sugar mill as well, right?
Absolutely. And so Hershey was lucky that they sold out in 1946. The company changed hands two more times before the revolution, so it was actually a Cuban sugar magnate named Julio Lobo who lost out in the end and lost all of his sugar mills and properties in Cuba and was forced to leave. Lobo came to the United States, and at that point, he still actually owned the trademark name Hershey in the use of sugar manufacturer. So we have a couple of examples of Hershey sugar that was produced here in the U.S. with the Hershey name on it through Lobo's company.
Valerie Sieber, we'll be talking more with Valerie in just a moment, but I want to bring our other guest in to talk about other aspects of Hershey Cuba in just a moment. Should mention that today's Smart Talk road trip live remote broadcast is supported by Roof Advisory Group and the Hershey Company. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to the Smart Talk road trip at the Hershey Story Museum on Chocolate Avenue, where we're discussing Hershey, Cuba. I want to bring Pamela Whitenack, who is the manager of the Hershey Community Archives, into our conversation now. Pam, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You had the opportunity to travel to Florida to interview former Hershey Cuba residents about their experiences. What did you learn?
It was a fascinating trip in that the people that I talked to, most of them had actually never met Milton Hershey, but they all talked about him like they actually had met him.
Did they say Mr. Hershey?
Yes, yeah. And just were so appreciative and honored to have grown up in that town, and they recognized that what a special place it was to grow up.
What did they say to you as far as growing up there? What was it like?
It sounded pretty idyllic, though it sounded a lot like growing up here in Hershey, Pennsylvania, and that the children went to the primary school was located in Hershey. If you were going to continue an education, you would have to go to Havana to attend a high school there. But they talked about riding bicycles in the streets or playing pickup games of baseball or going to the park, which was called the Hershey Gardens. To swim in areas that they weren't supposed to swim in because the water source was going by there. The kind of mischief that kids would typically do, doing chores for their family, is very, I think, a very typical childhood.
Typical for Hershey, Pennsylvania,
yes.
And Hershey, Cuba,
yes.
But how much was it typical of what was going on in the surrounding communities in Cuba?
That part I don't know. I definitely know that, Milton Hershey had made significant efforts to extend the sort of the work season. Growing sugar is a very, very seasonal, and it's a very short season. In Cuba, it runs from, about late December to April, the men would be mostly unemployed for the rest of the year. And Milton Hershey tried to counteract that by building the refinery so that the sugar season and work would extend a few more months, but also bringing other industries into the community, such as cattle and milk production and building a peanut oil plant and also a henequen plant. Henequen is what we make sisal out of, so like ropes and sisal rugs and things like that. And particularly henequen grows in areas that are not productive for sugar. So it was a nice, but all those industries added more jobs and more year-round jobs that would balance that short sugar season. So there was a lot more employment in Hershey, and as a result, the standard of living was higher because there was more income.
It sounds as if the people you spoke to, that when you use the word idyllic, that this was something they look back on fondly, that they did not have your typical Cuban experience, that this was happy childhood, good job, hard work, obviously, but that it was much different from 1916 to 1946 than the rest of the island.
I think so. I've never really looked at other sugar mill towns, so I don't have a real strong sense, but from little I know about the sugar industry and just the poverty that ensues because the employment period is so short when you're working in sugar. And one of the things that I think that Milton Hershey contributed to Cuba was Cuba was basically a one-crop country. They were highly dependent upon the sugar industry, and when sugar was doing well in the market, everyone succeeded. But when sugar prices dipped, people suffered, the employees suffered as well. And by the addition of other industries, at least in central Hershey, it sort of counteracted that in diversifying the economy.
Valerie Sieber, I want to bring you back in. Something that Pam just mentioned, in the exhibit, and I don't recall the exact figure, you probably know it, what percentage of sugar was exported, from Cuba? That it was their biggest crop, right?
That's right. I don't know the number exactly.
I seem to remember it was over 75% or something like that.
At one point in time, yes.
Was sugar produced by Hershey different than what was produced on other islands, maybe in the Caribbean?
Sugar. When you get to a certain purity standard, it doesn't really matter if it comes from cane or from beets.
You don't say that in exhibit, do you? Sugar?
No.
Good. Okay. That's good.
Something I learned along the way. It's not a lot of difference. But the thing that Milton Hershey did, he did a couple of unique things. He would store raw sugar in bulk to reduce costs. The
he owned several mills besides the one in Hershey. So those mills would ship their raw sugar to the refinery to help extend that employment season, like Pam was talking about. And he refined, he made his raw sugar at a higher purity standard than most others, so therefore it was easier to refine. It didn't quite take as long to do that. But, you know, he's providing, like Pam said, jobs year-round. The sugar, he created the first refinery, so he would actually refine, they would kind of contract out the refinery to other Cuban-owned mills as well to refine their sugar.
By the way, we have a large studio audience here for this Smart Talk road trip at the Hershey Story Museum. If any of our audience members would like to ask a question or make a comment about Milton Hershey and Hershey Cuba, step right up to the microphone. We're happy to have you join into the conversation. Nestor Gill is a professor at Lafayette College, and his father, Armando Gill, was born in Hershey, Cuba in 1942. Armando's father, Nestor's grandfather, was a dispatcher and then supervisor on the Hershey-Cuban Railroad. Now, we mentioned that briefly as we've been discussing Hershey-Cuba, but this was unusual for the time that there was a railroad. First of all, Mr. Gill, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So, you probably have heard a lot of stories over the years about Hershey-Cuba from your father and heard stories of your grandfather. What sticks with you?
Well, it's true, I have heard a lot of stories. If it weren't for the fact that my mom is also from Cuba and from Havana, so she had a lot of narratives from that city from her childhood, my understanding of Cuba might be limited to Hershey. And in fact, when I have traveled to the island in the last several years, and I went to Hershey and then went past Matanzas and out into the eastern part of the island, my father commented to me in 2015 that I was going further across the island than he had ever been. Because naturally, when you're a kid, you only go so far as you can. And so Hershey was his entire world until he was in high school and started making a daily trip to Havana to get that secondary education.
So he thought that because he was limited to Hershey, Cuba, he thought that's what all of Cuba was like?
Yeah, you've been back to a playground from your childhood and seen how small it is, right?
Yeah.
That's happened. When you're a kid, you think that your house is the whole world, and then you think that your neighborhood is the whole world and your town and so on. It kind of grows as you grow, the world for you, and his world was entirely Hershey, so the stories that he tells are very much like the ones that Pam just described, which it's it makes sense because some of the folks she interviewed were my father and my uncle, Dr. Federico Gil, who also contributed to the oral history. So going to the Hershey Gardens, going swimming, my students, although it's no longer prohibited because there's no longer a need for that water at the sugar refinery. My students, I traveled to Cuba with 24 students, and they jumped into the water right behind me, and you know, we celebrated a little bit of memory that was personal to me and just adventurous for them. My father often said that a Cuban who didn't know how to swim was like a person without any limbs, right? He so going swimming in the gardens, and the coast wasn't far away, and just a lot of what I think Pam is right when she says that that idyllic childhood is something that, quite honestly, most of us might look backward at our childhood and see it in a kind of poetic, gauzy, beautiful, nostalgic way. And that has to do with the limitations of our child mind. But I think uniquely in Hershey, with a particular kind of wonderful place that was constructed for a community of people by the man who owned the place.
So you have been by Hershey, Cuba now?
Yeah, I've been there three times.
What's it look like now?
The community of people is a beautiful, wonderful, living, breathing community of people like Cubans are. The town itself, the homes that people live in are, you know, obviously very well cared for. People have a strong sense of community. Sometimes I think in part due to the fact that a lot of the amenities that we have in the United States aren't available. No one has internet in their house. And so you know, air conditioning is rare, although maybe not necessary. It's really hot in Cuba.
I was surprised by that, I have to say.
But, you know, so people are outdoors a lot, and that creates a lot of a sense of community that is not typical in other places. So that's true. Also, the refinery itself is utterly dilapidated. It's completely come down, except for maybe a couple of towers. I was there in January, and you know, you can walk through almost unimpeded, although very dangerous to walk through because it's a dilapidated old site. But there's not really anyone there to tell you to go away. So,
we have an audience member who has a question or comment.
Did Mr. Hershey ever visit his town in Cuba?
Yes, he spent every winter from 1916 through 1937 in Cuba. He wanted to be there for the sugar season. He was also conveniently avoiding a Pennsylvania winter. But he was someone, and he was a very restless person, so he did travel the island quite a bit. So I think he had probably a broader experience of the island than your dad or uncle did. So yes, he was very familiar. He never learned to speak Spanish, though. He depended on always being with someone who could translate for him.
In the exhibit, and I don't want to give too much away, but I'll just give a little tease here, is there is a photograph of Milton Hershey playing golf on one of the golf courses. When I say one, were there more? There was just one? Okay. The golf course in Hershey, Cuba, and the exhibit actually has some of his golf clubs as well. So you can see that, you know, we all know, those who are familiar with his story here in Hershey, PA, that you know, the golf course that was developed, and he enjoyed golf, same in Hershey, Cuba as well. So, Nestor Gill, I mentioned that railroads in that era in Cuba probably were not, I don't know, it was not a big part of the infrastructure, and your grandfather worked on that railroad.
Yeah.
What were some of the stories you heard about some of the work day or some of the jobs that they did?
If my understanding is accurate, Valerie's right that sugar needed to be brought to the mill from a lot of different locations, and that made sense of the need of a railroad, the ability to transport all of that product across the island. The stories that I hear about my grandfather working on the railroad are all filtered through the lens of my father and my uncles going to see their father, you know, working on the railroad, and a kind of access that they had to the sites of the railroad and the sites of the refinery that was, I just described an unimpeded access if you were to go there now and walk through the old defunct refinery. I have a sense that young people in Hershey had that kind of an unimpeded access to the places where their parents were working. And so I have these sort of snapshot visions of my grandfather sitting at his desk, you know, dealing with the work of the person who sends the trains to different places. Dispatcher.
Dispatcher, there
right?
you go.
Right.
By the way, this is radio. He was doing some hand gestures here for our audience, but and that was pretty cool, by the way.
Yeah, I also I was an English teacher, so when I lose words, it's embarrassing. the images that I have are of him, you know, my grandfather returning home after a day of work. I have my uncle, my father's older brother, Rafael Gil, he actually worked for the railroad at ground level for a short time. He also traveled a lot between Cuba and Miami to work in tourism, as it was sort of burgeoning in Miami at the time. That was typical for young people to do on the island. It's difficult for me to speak to memories of what it was like to work for the railroad. I have products that are the result of that, right? Like old 5-pound bags from Hershey Sugar.
That's cool.
Made in Cuba, which apparently is something that older folks would remember being sold in the United States, Hershey Sugar in 5-pound bags.
Valerie, real quick, I wanted to, you had mentioned to me as we were going through the exhibit that you actually had a piece of memorabilia that had Nestor's grandfather's name on it, right?
Correct.
Before, let me have you tell the story.
So many years ago, we had acquired a railroad regulations book for the Hershey Cuban Railway, and it was just cataloged in the collection and sitting there, not doing much of anything. But Nestor's father and his family came, was that maybe 2 years ago?
3-4 years ago, unexpectedly out of the blue, came into the museum. We were so happy to have them here, and we sat downstairs in our classroom with maps, and you know, he told stories and things. And it wasn't until a few months ago that I had pulled the book out in preparation for the exhibit and was flipping through it, and Nestor's grandfather's name was written in the front cover of the book. So I very excitedly called him and let him know that.
So you had that before they
we had met the Gill family. Yeah.
It's incredible.
Valerie actually sent me a JPEG file of the image of the signature, which created this internet sensation for a moment among my family members as I sent it out to family and extended family as this incredible discovery of the,
So how'd that make you feel? I always wonder when someone discovers a piece of family history that is a bigger part of history, when you see that, and it does become you know, a big thing on the internet for your family members, what were your thoughts at the time?
It's I guess it reminds me that we're always like walking among our ghosts, you know, that they're always beside us and they're always among us. And just now walking through the exhibit and seeing my uncle's name attached to quotes and seeing my father's name attached to a story from his childhood. And, you know, these are people who they're alive and they're not alive at the same time. And so seeing the name of a grandfather who I never met because he never left the island of Cuba, and but whose knowledge I've inherited because of things that my father showed me how to do that he learned how to do from his grandfather and explicitly told me, I learned how to do this from your grandfather, right? Something about that might be the answer to your question.
It's a beautiful way to put it, Mr. Gill. Thank you very much. We mentioned that there was a golf course in Hershey, Cuba, and there were a lot of other activities for the Hershey, Cuba workers to do, much like here in Hershey, Pennsylvania, that Milton Hershey wanted everyone to be happy, thought there would be good workers. Baseball became huge in Cuba, still is, but very early on, baseball was a big part of Hershey, Cuba. Joining us now is Thomas Goodman, who's the Executive Director of the Caribbean Educational and Baseball Foundation. Mr. Goodman, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
When I say that baseball was and still is king in Cuba as far as sports, provide a description, and I'm not even talking about the history, but how big baseball is in Cuba.
Well, just like in the United States, it's considered the national pastime. It has been played there almost as long as it's been played in the United States since the 1860s. And you see it in all parts of life throughout the country, in small towns, in the big cities, in the streets, in the baseball fields. And the town of Hershey embraced that same passion, which we've identified over the years as something we have in common with Cuba.
Not only a passion, but the baseball teams in Hershey, Cuba were good.
Oh, they were excellent. They won 7 championships in the amateur league in the 1930s and the 1940s. And in fact, several players went on to become professional baseball players in the United States as well as in Cuba. And while they didn't necessarily have the hardest jobs at the factory, they were employees of the company. But they were brought on, let's say, for their baseball skills.
Ah, so they were recruited to the mill for their baseball skills.
That's the word.
Well, hey, you know, if you can make sugar and you can play baseball, why not kill 2 birds with 1 stone?
Correct.
What were the fields like back in those days?
Well, if we were talking about a description of the town, and really the centerpiece of the town was the baseball field. There was a giant grandstand, there was a scoreboard in the outfield, and it really was a place for the community to gather. In fact, I've made several trips to the town in recent years, and we've gone back to the same field, which still exists, just in a different form. The grandstands are largely gone. The field is in disrepair. In fact, I was there a few months ago, and they lost a big outfield wall during Hurricane Irma. But the field is in the exact same spot as it was.
And was this a place, you mentioned large grandstand, I mean, well attended? Was this something that was the pride that Hershey, Cuba was proud of, that they had great baseball?
Absolutely. Like it is today, it was a community gathering place, and Sundays were the day, and that's when the team played first in the Sugar Mill League, which was a competition among different sugar mills throughout the island, and then later in the Amateur League.
So were there players, individual players, who stuck out?
There were. The best was Roberto Ortiz, who later became the first player to hit a home run in Estadio Latinoamericano in Havana when he became a player in the professional league there. And there were several, as I mentioned earlier, that went on to play professionally in the United States. Mm-hmm.
Is there a Babe Ruth of Cuba from that era?
That's hard to say, and I don't want to start a baseball debate this morning.
Oh, why not? We could do that here. But I mean, were there players who were just so out? You mentioned Ortiz, but were there other players that if you talked to old-time baseball fans in Cuba, they would say, you should have seen this guy play?
Yeah, there was another named Kia Valdez, who was renowned as the best player at the time. In fact, opted to stay with the Hershey team due to the pay and also just the fans within the amateur league, because that was often a different scene from the professional league. Mm.
So I'm going to bring this to today. As Mr. Goodman mentioned, that he was in Hershey, Cuba just a few months ago, and you'll be going back next week?
Yes, sir.
Listen to this. This sounds like a great project. But there are plans for an exchange program with kids from Hershey, Cuba coming to Pennsylvania and Hershey, Pennsylvania going to Cuba, right?
Right, and through our engagement, through our foundation, we've spoken to a lot of folks on the ground in Cuba to identify priorities, you know, mutual respect and collaboration, and what do we have in common. And of course, it's baseball, and through these conversations, we also identified the town of Hershey as something we have in common. And because our programming is youth-focused, we decided to make trips to the town to visit their Little League games. Right. Now they have players age 7 to 14 practicing every day out there. There's horses grazing in the outfield, and it's not the best conditions, but that passion for baseball drives these kids every day, just like the kids here. So we thought, what better way than to bring our countries together, the two cities together, through this shared passion.
When will this occur, or is it still on the drawing board?
Still on the drawing board. Things take time, but we're hopeful that we'll be able to move forward here over the coming months.
And your organization has plans to actually refurbish those fields so that there aren't horses keeping the grass short in the outfield.
Right. We may modernize the lawn mowing system. and we will also hopefully, you know, nothing too dramatic, but, you know, bring some paint for the grandstands and make the playing field a little bit more level, things like that.
So I'm trying to get a sense. The mills themselves have been dilapidated, as described. What about other places to stay for these kids and the coaches and all that will go to Hershey, Cuba?
That's a good question. I mean, in the town itself, there's Casa Particulares, which are the private homes where a lot of the kids would stay. The kids that play, you know, live in the town or the surrounding communities.
So if you had your way, as you said, still on the drawing board, when would this happen, and what age group are we talking about?
I think within the next, you know, 6 to 18 months, and the age group will be hopefully to match, you know, the group of teenagers down in Cuba.
Any plans to have Hershey, PA play Hershey, Cuba? Maybe for the Hershey World Series?
That's a fantastic idea.
Is that the first you've heard of that?
We'll talk after the show.
Okay, all right. Thought of that right away. I was like, now you need a trophy, you know? Probably the 10-pound Hershey bar and all that on top of it. But Thomas Goodman, thank you very much. As a baseball fan, just, you know, it's fascinating. And I don't even know if we can provide a sense of how popular baseball is in Cuba. There are so many in Major League Baseball today, and so many more who probably could play Major League Baseball or talented enough, but just can't get off the island. Is that any easier, by the way?
No, and that's a separate issue, but that's something else that still needs to be worked out. But I will point out that in the 1950s, there was a AAA team affiliated with the Cincinnati Reds that played in Havana, and indeed their name was the Sugar Kings. Hmm.
Thomas Goodman, thank you very much for being with us today. I want to thank all our guests for this portion of the program. Valerie Sieber, who is the collections manager of the Hershey Story Museum. Pamela Whitenack, manager of Hershey Community Archives. Nestor Gill, professor at Lafayette College, who spoke about his father and grandfather's experience growing up in Hershey, Cuba. And Thomas Goodman, executive director of the Caribbean Educational and Baseball Foundation. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Welcome.
Thanks, pleasure.
Today's Smart Talk Road Trip live remote broadcast is supported by Roof Advisory Group and the Hershey Company. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to this Smart Talk Road Trip. We're coming to you live from the Hershey Story Museum on Chocolate Avenue in Hershey, talking about, we just finished our conversation about the new exhibit about Hershey, Cuba. And again, I encourage everyone who's listening to come out to see that and learn a lot about Hershey, Cuba, and see how many, how many things you can find, characteristics you can find in Hershey, Cuba that you would find in Hershey, Pennsylvania as well. Hershey has always been thought of what a small American town should be. And part of that was Milton Hershey's vision. But Hershey also has been a place that welcomed visitors who came for the chocolate, Hershey Park, Hershey Gardens, Hershey Theater, and Hershey Bears hockey team. Hershey also has restaurants and night spots too. Night spots, that's the word I'm trying to say. It also is constantly going through changes. On this segment of the program, we'll discuss economic development in Hershey and Derry Township. Joining us is Derry Township Supervisor Susan Court. Supervisor Court, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Scott.
Also joining us is Lauren Zumbrun, who is the manager of the Derry Township Economic Development. Ms. Zumbrun, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you.
And I will tell our audience once again that if you have a question or comment talking about economic development in Hershey, step right up to the microphone and ask your question. You know, there is so much going on in Hershey right now. Many people, we were talking earlier about childhood memories and memories people have. So many people who live here, grew up here, have memories of the town itself. It was an idyllic place to grow up. People who visit also have those memories, Hershey Park and other attractions here in Hershey. But right under our very eyes, there have been changes going on throughout the years. In fact, right next to us is one of the big ones. Susan Court, talk a little bit about what's going on next to the museum.
Well, I think it's interesting to point out about change, because that's not just in Derry Township. That's all of our hometowns. As we think back to where we grew up, things are constantly changing. And even though Milton Hershey hasn't been here since 1945, his legacy continues. And I think everybody in our community, in particular the stewards, past and present of our community, want to make sure that we continue to have a place that people want to live and recreate and dine and shop and visit. So all the changes that have happened over the years and continue to happen hopefully support that sense of community that we're all looking for. You mentioned all the attributes, some of the wonderful things we have here. Of course, the gardens, the Hershey Theater, Hershey Park, concerts, 13 miles of bike trails. I mean, there's so many wonderful amenities in our community, but how often have you heard visitors say, hey, this place is great, but where's the downtown? Where is the downtown? It's been sadly and sorely missing. So finally, there's some development that is happening next door on a lot that's been vacant for many years. And we're very excited that within the next several months, we're going to see some additional restaurants and retail coming to downtown. And Lauren can speak to this as well. But unlike a lot of communities where there are empty storefronts, we struggle because we don't have enough storefronts. We don't have places for businesses to go. So finally, we're seeing some changes downtown.
Town center, right?
Correct, yeah. So the Hershey Town Square project.
Town Square, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. We're super excited for it. It represents approximately $25 million in private investment that we're seeing on this lot next door. It is a tough lot to develop. You know, like Susan said, it has sat vacant for easily a dozen years, if not longer.
What was there before?
Oh, boy. Well, the existing building that's there was a former abattoir. Building that, and then it housed the post office for a while and the Hershey dry cleaners and
mm-hmm. going way back, private homes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh no, that's fine. So we're very excited to see this really taking off. You know, several plans were brought forward for development over the years, and really none of them were able to advance because it is a tough site to develop. We're anticipating that it's going to create about 500 new jobs, which is very exciting. It'll contain a mix of restaurant and retail uses. So what we have is three buildings that are going up along Chocolate Avenue. And renovation of the former abattoir into Class A commercial office space. So along Chocolate, we're going to have a Starbucks. The most recent announcement was that Iron Hill Brewery will be coming. So they'll have the largest space in the center, about 9,000 square feet. That's one that I think people here are excited for. They will be brewing on site. We'll also have restaurant uses associated with that. And really the thought, you know, like Susan said, that that what this project gets us, you know, kind of tenets aside, is the built form. You know, we have these businesses that want to come to Hershey and want to locate in Hershey, but what we really lack is that built form. So other older communities, you know, often struggle with vacant storefronts. We're lucky that we don't have that problem, but we need some place for them to go.
And I think what's exciting, too, is that, you know, even though not everybody may be excited about another Starbucks, for example, what that does is that sparks economic development in and around downtown Hershey. Mm-hmm. So shops may start opening on Caracas nearby. In fact, we've got a spice shop opening up very soon. So there are local businesses, mom and pop kind of businesses that we all remember growing up that will be coming as a result of the more well-known brands that are going to be coming in next door.
Well, two of the brands you just mentioned, Starbucks and any kind of brewery, actually, talk to people when they develop downtowns. They say, oh, nowadays you must have a craft brewery. And Iron Hill is a good place to start, so I'm sure you'll have very, very many visitors. Why is the site so difficult to develop?
I think it's a number of things. You know, one is location. There was a fueling station on there, so you know,
there's gasoline underneath.
Environmental concerns, and just also, you know, general bedrock geology and the composition of the geology in the area.
Susan, I was a little surprised to hear you say that you've heard from people over the years who said, "Where's the downtown?" Because, I remember hearing stories of my wife, for example, coming with her mother to the Hershey department store. Mm-hmm. And, of course, people going to the theater, WITF used to be on the theater.
Sure.
Ground. So that's been a problem in the past, that the people didn't come downtown?
Well, I don't know that people didn't come downtown, but unlike some downtowns we may like to frequent, it's difficult to walk from point A to point B to do things. I mean, obviously you can come down to go to the theater, and there are a number of really fine restaurants right along downtown Hershey, but in terms of having it be walkable and bikeable to shop, unlike some other communities, we've not been able to have that. Now, going back into the 50s and 60s and probably early 70s, I even remember moving here 30 years ago and going to Posers and getting clothes
right,
from my older
right.
daughter.
Right.
So though I remember those days very fondly, but like every other community, Hershey's gone through change, and I think we're looking to try to come back to having that downtown, so you can come with your families, come with your guests, and park your car in the garage or one of the parking lots and spend the afternoon or the evening here.
So what is the vision for Hershey and Derry Township? I mean, and Derry Township, by the way, it's not just downtown Hershey that you're thinking about, but in about 2 minutes, what's the vision?
Wow, I think that's tough. To continue to grow to serve the needs of the residents, first and foremost, the businesses, and also the visitors who come here, to make sure that the offerings, the amenities that we have in our community represent their needs. And that, I think, is first and foremost for people who are stewards of the community. As we look, for example, to build out a proposed new community center on Cocoa Avenue, you know, the current center was built in 55, and I'm sorry, in 63. So as that facility now approaches its 55th year, it's falling apart. It's not meeting the needs of the community. Mechanically, it's falling apart. But just from a space standpoint, you know, we can't put classes in there like we want to. Meetings are being held on a basketball court, which has a tile floor. I mean, it was in its day suiting the needs of the community, but today and moving forward, it will not. So we want to make sure with everything that we do that the community is involved, and that's a good example of community involvement, that since about 2014, there have been listening sessions, and the public's been involved to find out what would you like to see in a community center, what's relevant to you, so that as we move forward with building something, it represents their needs today and hopefully sets the stage to meet the needs of residents for many decades to come. So I think keeping community top of mind is probably the main part of what the vision is for the growth of our community.
Well, for those residents and for those visitors coming to Derry Township and Hershey, I'm sure they'll be keeping a close eye on it. I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Lauren Zumbrum is the Derry Township Economic Development Manager, Derry Township Supervisor Susan Court. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for everybody for coming today.
Today's Smart Talk Road Trip live broadcast was supported by Roof Advisory Group and the Hershey Company. Coming up on tomorrow's program, We're going to be talking about geography education. It's one of those topics, one of those subjects in school that, well, it's not tested on the state test. And there are a lot of students out there who probably need better education when it comes to geography. And I will say, there's a method to our madness. The State Geography Bee is coming up on Friday. We'll have our own little Geography Bee. If you ever heard our Smart Talk Spelling Bee, where we've embarrassed ourselves, tomorrow we will embarrass ourselves when it comes to geography. That's tomorrow on Smart Talk.